Goodman Plumbing makes a living by servicing their clients' needs. They make their life by how they service their clients, from the first phone call to when they leave your home when the job is done. Goodman Plumbing is dedicated to providing top-of-the-line quality work. Call Goodman Plumbing, that's with a P, as in your preferred plumber.
Goodman Plumbing, how can we make you smile?
There are, in my book, there are two kinds of geniuses. There are geniuses that you see perform and you tell yourself, oh, I could never do that, and that they sort of shut down your creativity. Then there are geniuses that you see that draw you in and fire you up to go and be creative and to write songs and to play. And though he's leagues beyond where I'll ever be, Phil Kagi is the second category. When I'm around Phil,
The voice you're listening to is that of Michael Card, and he'll get into some song here in a little bit, but I wanted you to hear just a little bit of him because you get a sense of his sensitivity and his heart for things. And he's doing a concert. By the way, you're listening to The Faith Debate. I'm Troy Skinner, joined this week by Jonathan Schweitzer, senior pastor at Crossroads Valley Chapel, Steve Hall, founder and director of The Least of These Ministries, and Greg Luke, a volunteer and supporter of Least of These Ministries, and also come to find out with Reasonable Faith as well, doing apologetics work. We'll talk about that in just a second. But why are we talking about Michael Card and listening to the music and all that sort of stuff? Michael Card's going to be in concert this coming weekend, next week, 6 days from now on March 27th at... Steve, help me again. I forget the name of the church. It's in Carroll County.
Grace Lutheran Church.
Grace Lutheran Church in Westminster?
In Westminster.
Westminster.
21 Carroll Street.
There you go. Put it in MapQuest and go. If you want to get tickets, go to leastofthesemin.org. All right? And you can spell least of these men. You can probably, if you can't spell that, we don't want you at the concert. No, I'm just kidding. Yes, Steve's like, no, please, I want everybody who can possibly afford it to come. And they are affordable tickets.
Yes.
And I kind of mentioned in passing, I think it's a cool idea. If you're interested at all in hearing Michael Card do the Easter story through song, and you think it might be cool to do with some people you go to church with, maybe put together a little loose confederation of people and, you know, jump in a minivan or get a bus or whatever and head out as a group. That'd be cool.
It would certainly put a different and closer perspective on the Easter story for the following Sunday. This is going to be the Saturday night before Palm Sunday, and it really would set the stage for Easter Sunday.
And it's not just Michael singing, but it's a big choral group will be backing
yes,
him.
Yes, very large.
Two choirs.
So it's going to be a pretty cool show for those that can make it.
Are you sitting in on one of those choirs?
No, they've heard me singing, so I wasn't asked.
They wouldn't let you sing. I mean, just checking.
Maybe Jonathan will go, and if Jonathan goes, you'll be sure to point him out to people so they can give him the raspberry.
Absolutely, yeah. I'll say he's the guy that caused all the trouble when we're on the radio.
There you go.
Now, I wanted to take a second to talk about the Reasonable Faith thing that Greg Luke is involved with, but
yeah.
Before we get into that,
yeah.
I want to make sure we have time to get this off our chest.
All right.
A few weeks ago, more than a few weeks ago, Britt Hume made a comment about Tiger Woods. He was asked, what would you say to Tiger Woods to give him some advice to turn his life around? And he said, well, I think Tiger Woods is in need of redemption. And as far as I'm concerned, the only place you can find redemption is in Jesus Christ. And I understand that Tiger is a Buddhist, and I'm not sure that Buddhism offers much in the way of redemption, but I'd encourage Tiger to explore Christianity. That was the gist of what Britt Hume said. It caused this reasonable firestorm after that. And
yeah.
We, a couple weeks after the firestorm, because we're always right on top of these things on the Faith Debate
That's
show.
That's right, yeah.
Well, we want to have time to let things percolate and really have well-formulated thoughts, right? We don't want to just fire from the hip, because the truth matters, baby.
There, he right? said it again, yes.
So it's all about the truth.
Baby.
So anyway, so we talked about it on this show a few weeks back.
Yeah.
Since we did that show,
yeah,
Tiger Woods, of course, has come out and made his public confessional.
That's
I don't know
right.
what that was. We were all his priest for a moment there. I'm not
yes.
sure what that was. But as part of his public apology speech, whatever, he addressed that issue. He didn't mention Britt Hume by name or anything like that.
No.
But it was definitely, he was responding to that, it seems to me.
Yeah.
And he talked about how he's a Buddhist.
Yeah.
He was raised a Buddhist. And his problems come from
A rejection, backsliding from his Buddhist
of his
teachings.
Buddhism, so he's going to now recommit to being a good Buddhist.
Wait,
so
like,
what do you think
about
that?
I even remember the phrase. The phrase was that Buddhism has taught me that the craving for things outside of one's own self leads to a pointless and meaningless existence, which I thought was very interesting because, you know,
I would say that's part of it. But if you are looking for those answers inside of yourself, you're also going to find a pointless, meaningless existence.
Well, this is the whole thing, because I'm of the opinion, because of what the Bible says, that what a man truly desires is unfailing love. And that's not something that you can find in your own heart.
No.
You know, it says it in Proverbs. It says, what a man truly desires is unfailing love. Better to be poor than a liar. And I think the same thing's true about Tiger. What Tiger's looking for is unfailing love. He's looking for it from his wife. He's looking for it from his, you know, from his family. And the reality is that at the end of the day, that's a nice philosophy that he shared, but he doesn't come anywhere close to living by that philosophy.
Here I think this is Tiger's portion of his speech where he talks about his Buddhism. Let's see if this is it.
And I tend to dedicate myself to doing it. Part of following this path, for me, is Buddhism, which my mother taught me at a young age. People probably don't realize it, but I was raised a Buddhist, and I actively practiced my faith from childhood until I drifted away from it in recent years. Buddhism teaches that a craving for things outside ourselves causes an unhappy and pointless search for security. It teaches me to stop following every impulse and to learn restraint. Obviously, I lost track of what I was taught.
Yeah, obviously, I guess he lost track of that. But he's still, in my opinion, as a Christian listening,
yeah.
The problem is, if he wants to really abide by Buddhist teaching, if he really wants to divest himself of caring about anything, about having any concerns about things that are worldly,
right.
He will give up golf.
Yeah.
He will give up his wife.
Precisely.
He will give up his cars, his endorsements. He will give up his speaking opportunities. He will give up the chance to speak before these cameras and explain himself because he won't care about any of that anymore, and he will just evaporate into nirvana. That would be being true to Buddhism. So even as he stands there and speaks, he's not being true to Buddhism.
And having said that, we invite any Buddhist that lives anywhere in Frederick that would like to better explain what Buddhism teaches to us to come on the show and to teach us, because we want to have that discussion. We actually had on a Tibetan Buddhist monk on the show, and for the life of us, it was very difficult to get him to say just about anything. Like every time he would say, well, this is what it is, I'd say, oh, well, that's kind of like Christianity. And then he'd say, no, it's nothing like Christianity. And so I'd be like, okay, it's nothing like Christianity. And then sure enough, like a minute later, he'd be like, oh, well, it's just like Christianity. I'm like, oh, okay, so it's like Christianity. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I said, okay. And then I'd go on that for a minute, and then he'd say, no, it's nothing like Christianity. The point was is that at the end of the day, he didn't want to be pinned down on any definitions, because Buddhism doesn't give any clear definitions at the end of the day. And so when he gave his philosophy that it's not wise to crave anything outside of oneself, the bottom line is then he's basically asking us to not be human. I crave love, and it's human to crave love.
And I think that all the religions of the world are craving for some kind of spiritual connection to our Creator. They may not realize that, or that may not be in their statement of faith.
Well, my argument for my study of Buddhism is that Buddhism and Hinduism actually both tend to be the exact opposite. The basic philosophy is a choosing to give up on life. And to lose yourself, lose your personality, lose any sense of meaning in this existence, in this world, because you've given up hope, because life is suffering and you don't want anything to do with it, any of it anymore. And so you go sit somewhere so that you can be released from the cycle of suffering, because you're sick and tired of the cycle of suffering and you want to be released. My sense is that Buddhism and Hinduism in particular, as religious structures, particularly invite people to give up hope. And that's exact opposite of what Christianity says. Christianity says, no, you should hope. And you should hope for unfailing love that comes from outside of yourself. And you can find it, because God has chosen to send his son, Jesus Christ, and to show us precisely that kind of unfailing love. And so my sense is that Tiger, when he was the Buddhism that he claims to have been following when he was following it, he was following kind of a nicey moral structure that really does not line up with Buddhist teaching.
And in opposition to that, to really find joy, I think you actually need to go get into that misery, obviously not to bring it upon yourself, but to go do things like Steve does with the Least of These Ministries and get your hands into serving those people.
I agree.
You feel when you're down there doing something like that selfish because you're feeling, it wasn't so much feeling good about myself, but I was, I mentioned feeling the Holy Spirit, I think, last program while we were worshiping with them, and I felt, kind of guilty about in taking some pleasure out of that, which is stupid because obviously God was sharing himself with me at that moment.
Sure.
That was, that is where joy is, and I know Steve and his wife Anne get a lot of pleasure out of doing this work.
Greg, is this sort of conversation about, Buddhism and how it compares to Christianity or whatever, is it the kind of thing that you get involved with? Explain what the Reasonable Faith.
Reasonable Faith is a organization founded by Dr. William Lane Craig, who's probably the leading Christian apologist in the world, apologetics being the defense of the faith, explanation of the faith.
Yeah, by the way, quick aside, if you're not familiar with William Lane Craig, if you've never seen him in action, you can go online and Google William Lane, L-A-N-E, Craig, C-R-A-I-G.
Correct.
Google that name, and there's some really cool videos of him debating atheists, agnostics,
Christopher Hitchens, Atkins,
some really cool stuff. He's very, very sharp. He's probably one of the most intelligent men alive on the planet today. He's so sharp.
There's no doubt about it.
Whether you agree with him or not, and if you're not a Christian, you're not going to agree with his point of view, there's no denying the guy's abilities to speak and articulate and defend his point of view. But anyway,
atheists, after debates that he has, atheists will say, well, Craig won, but that's because he's a better debater. But, the fact that he's got the...
It's a curse that he has, right? He's so gifted, they use it against him. Yeah.
Well, and in fact, if I've seen guys not so gifted debates who still would win the day because really the reason, the logic, the science, everything is with us if we... we've just allowed other people to interpret those things into...
Yeah, and to intimidate us into silence.
Exactly. And when they tell us that the universe came into existence from a big bang from nothing, when you ask them what could cause such a thing, they tell you, well, that's, I don't know what it was, but it wasn't magic and those kind of things. Well,
Now, that's not to say that, William Lane Craig is beyond reproach or that, everybody's going to agree with, every Christian is going to believe everything that William Lane Craig says. That's why, one of the reasons why a show like this can exist.
Yeah.
William Lane Craig, this is for those of you eggheads, the theological eggheads who love the show for this reason. Everybody else, stay with me for 45 seconds. We'll come back to normal speak. But William Lane Craig has come under fire, for those who care about these things, for his belief in middle knowledge. If you don't know what that means, it's the question is, how does God know the future? Does he know the future because he knows what decisions people are going to make before they make them? Does God cause those decisions? Is there some middle ground in between that? There's at least probably a half a dozen ways to understand how God knows everything.
Yeah.
And one of those ways is middle knowledge. That's the view that William Lane Craig holds, and it's a minority view, and most evangelical conservative Christians would criticize him for that. He's also an old earth guy. Mm. So if you're a young earth guy, if you believe that the earth is only 6,000-7,000 years old, then you're going to have some issues with William Lane Craig because he believes that the earth is quite possibly and likely millions of years old.
Or four and a half billion. Is what science would say. But and that's my personal view, but there's actually something that's quietly been talked about in science over the last 8-10 years is the fact that the speed of light may be slowing down. And this is, I've mentioned this to people and they say you're a screwball for it's got to be some creationist who came up with this. But as we've measured the speed of light over the last 200 years, it appears to be slowing down and in a rate that would indicate it was very much faster not very long ago.
And there was a study, I think it was within the last 10 years, that was done that shows that the speed of light can be altered.
Yes.
I think it was scientifically proven. So this thing, we were all raised but being taught, right, that the speed of light is a constant of the universe.
Yeah, and it appears...
Well, one, it can be altered. Scientifically, they've proven it can be altered, so it's not a constant. And so that helps to lend some credence to the view that, well, if it's not a constant, it could speed up or slow down, couldn't it?
So, doesn't mean like it out did, there in outer space, it kicks into hyperspace for a little bit, and then and then comes back out of hyperspace so that we can see it again.
Well, if we look through a telescope and we're looking at something, say 8 billion light years away, then we're seeing light that we think left 8 billion years ago. But if it initially was going 10 to the 10 times faster, may have only been, say, 6,000 or 8,000 years ago. I don't hold to that theory myself. I agree with Dr. Craig. I'm old Earth creationist, and the six Genesis days are six long time periods. But I'm not the kind of person who dismisses anything. I will listen to your evidence and sure. I try to go where that lens leads me.
So you're probably a big fan of, is it called the Discovery Institute? Is that what it's called out in Seattle?
Yes. I'm actually, there's also Ken Ham's organization, Answers in Genesis, which is, I'm considered a heretic, and so is Dr. Craig for even considering old Earth, but I even respect that. Anything that gets people talking about God and Jesus is a good thing. Well, but
I'm going to make everybody mad on this one.
Here we go.
Anybody who's going to die on that hill doesn't understand their Bible. If you're a young earther, I think that you biblically have a right to believe that. I think
Certainly.
You can biblically support that view. If you're an old earther, I think you can still be a good Bible believer. I don't think that the Bible gives us ironclad, absolute, definitive answer on how old the earth is. And so if you're going to die on that hill and divide with somebody and call somebody a heretic over that, I don't think you understand your Bible very well.
And the reason you say that is because the first chapter of the Bible is clearly an amalgamation of poetry to argue that it's a chronological, historical document, specifically the first chapter of Genesis is something that most people would say that it's not.
I actually would, but that it is six long time periods.
But would you agree that the literature that you see in Genesis chapter 1 comes to us in a poetic form as opposed to a chronological form?
At least a quasi-poetic.
For example, when you open your Bible, is it written in those little poetical paragraphs like you're looking at the Psalms, or is it written in a format that looks like it's just a chronology like you see starting up in Genesis chapter 2. I think most Bibles put it in the poetic form.
I try to let the Lord speak to me through the Bible as opposed to maybe how it was organized by somebody, but I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you.
Sure.
I think that, it's not an exact match of what happened, but when we look at like the Cambrian explosion, when all this life came onto the earth, I would look at that and say that looks like day 5 in Genesis.
Yeah. By the way, he used a big word there, and I'm going to bet that there's one person who doesn't know what the Cambrian explosion is. So you want to take a second to explain that?
About 450 million years ago. I'm doing this without any notes in front of me, but the amount of life on the earth went from
practically none.
To all of a sudden, yes, 70 what are called phylum, and currently we're down to 39.
Yeah,
so
it's a classic apologetics argument against evolutionism, because there's these different strata on the earth.
And there are other times where this has happened.
All these strata are labeled and have names, and they represent a period of time, thousands of years or whatever, hundreds of thousands of years. And so you go through all these different layers. No life, or at least no fossil record, no reason to believe there was life anyway, right? No fossil record, no evidence of life.
There is limited.
And then a little bit of life, and then you reach the strata that I think is labeled the Cambrian strata, and there's this explosion of, all of a sudden, there's just oodles and oodles of fossil record and evidence of life. It happened like in the snap of a finger kind of a thing.
Almost like there was a flood.
So the evolutionist view is that gradually over time this became that, which then became that, which then became that, and eventually the amoeba turned into a human being, over a long period of time. But this explosion of the fossil record would indicate that no, it happened in a very short period of time, not enough time for evolution to have done what it's supposed to do.
So not even close. And One of the things that if you get, I get into these discussions occasionally with naturalist, atheist, Methodist, excuse me, not Methodist, materialists.
They call Wesleyan slip.
Exactly, which is where you're in a church. But these
Are folks, you a Baptist?
No, I'm a Methodist, believe it or not. Oh. So, but in any case, well, the thing is that they always change what they call themselves. You know, you try to figure out, it's almost like you were talking about the Buddhist. You know, they're constantly changing.
Yeah.
One of the things that when you talk about how life began with an evolutionist is that, well, that's not evolution. That's abiogenesis. That's how life began. That's not how life changed. And I'm like, well, don't you need
you
to
believe,
start with something?
Yeah, yeah.
And the real problem that naturalists have is that when the Earth cooled and life could first begin to possibly exist, if you look in the geological record, there it is. There are a handful of single-celled life forms that begin immediately. There's no primordial soup. There's none of the things that they predicted that would be there that would spontaneously generate life.
Yeah, we didn't see that on Mars either.
Yeah.
So what is your take on how the what are the big elephants, the woolly mammoths?
The dinosaurs, that sort of thing?
No, no, no. Specifically the woolly mammoths.
To an elephant with big tusks and hair on it.
What is your take on why it is that those guys are invariably found with food in their stomach? You know, that in an area that we're told that over thousands of years we were supposed to have an ice age where these guys were literally hiking, you know, hundreds of thousands of miles south and then back up again. And what we find them is we find them where it looks like literally that they fell straight down into the mud or buried in the mud after they had just eaten a nice meal of daisies. And then overnight they froze with the daisies in their stomach.
I think it was man-made.
Like, how in the world does that happen?
It was man-made global warming.
Yeah, see? Because if you're a scientist, you can change your mind because you're constantly changing your mind.
I was reading online somebody said that Al Gore should give back his Nobel Peace Prize, by the way. But, well, you know, you're leading toward the flood there, but one of the things that...
Well, he didn't get the Peace
Prize. I'm not going to go there. Yeah. What did he get?
Whatever prize he got.
He got one of the other Nobel Prizes.
Yeah. Whatever, they're handing them out like candy if you're that ilk.
Sure are,
but,
yeah. Trick or treat.
One of the other things that in the layer of record there that lends to a catastrophic flood is that we find trees petrified through what should be millions of layers of sediment rock.
Yeah.
If the tree was standing upright as the layers came up upon it, it would have rotted. It would not have petrified there. And that's actually a young Earth argument as well.
Totally, right.
Which
I was going to point that out in a second because you're an old Earth guy. How do you explain that?
The flood.
From an old Earth.
I can punt and explain that as the flood. I don't know.
But doesn't the flood explain the Cambrian explosion as well?
I mean,
why go back to an old Earth to explain that and then pop up to a new Earth flood for the other?
I make the argument. I don't subscribe to the young Earth and that's how the tree got there. I would say that the flood caused that, but the Cambrian explosion, I think, is.
Could the flood have caused that?
No, because I think that would have lower in the layers for one, and two is it would have. My problem with that would be that if you're saying all these came onto the scene after the flood would be God creating then, as opposed to God allowing life after the flood to naturally, evolve, but as it was programmed genetically to do, for the canine to become a wolf and a dog and so forth.
Right.
So after the flood, that might happen, but new species do not come from... In other words, these are whole new groupings that show up at the Cambrian explosion, and so that's not what I would see after after the flood. And if we hold to,
can we stay here for a second, or how are we doing time wise?
I think we should continue.
Let me give you one
but
more.
We'll have to continue in another show. We've got like 60 seconds, 90 seconds left in the show.
Could I just I can finish this pretty quickly.
Okay.
At the end of the sixth day, God stopped creating, and mankind was his last creation.
Yeah.
And so
that's what we're told.
We would not expect to see any new animals come onto the scene after that. So that's why I would believe it was not after the flood.
Okay. So I have questions that we'll talk about next time around.
By the way, for the record, because the truth matters. baby. It was the Peace Prize, so I stand corrected.
It was?
Al Gore.
Yeah.
It was the
Nobel Peace Prize.
2007, I guess, because of his climate change nonsense. Anyway.
Yes, and now Inhofe is calling for a major investigation into the ClimateGate emails that just came out just a couple weeks
ago.
The
tangled web.
Yes.
Web that gets weaved. Yes. All right, well, you didn't hear much of Steve Hall. Just to prove that he's here, say hello.
I'm still here. Hello, Steve. Everybody.
One of the reasons we wanted to have them on was to talk about these sorts of things, but also least of these ministries, which Greg Luke is involved with in addition to his work with Reasonable Faith. Steve Hall is a founder and director of the Least of These Ministries, and they've got a big fundraiser concert taking place this coming Saturday. So in like 30 seconds, tell me what I got to know about this concert.
Michael Card's coming to Westminster to Grace Lutheran Church on 21 Carroll Street. And he's going to put together a fabulous concert with the Methodist and Lutheran church choirs backing him up. And he's even written some new music for this. So we're looking forward to a great time. And you can get tickets by calling our office or going online to leastofthesemen.org. And it gives you all the information you want right there.
So it's Michael Card in concert this coming Saturday in Carroll County in Westminster. And again, it's www.leastofthesemen.org. Jonathan Schweitzer, Senior Pastor, Crossroads Valley Chapel. Thank
you.
Steve Hall, Founder and Director of the Least of These Ministries. Greg Luke, involved with Least of These Ministries and also with Reasonable Faith. I'm Troy Skinner. Thanks for listening to The Faith Debate. And we're going to wrap up the show just by listening to a little bit of Michael Card on the way out. Until next week and beyond, God bless.
Goodman Plumbing makes a living by servicing their clients' needs. They make their life by how they service their clients, from the first phone call to when they leave your home when the job is done. Goodman Plumbing is dedicated to providing top-of-the-line quality work. Call Goodman Plumbing. That's with a P, as in your preferred plumber.
Goodman Plumbing. How can we make you smile?